Welcome to the Offbeat Podcast. I'm going to be talking today with author Tom Wooten. Tom has a book that's just come out called We Shall Not Be Moved, Rebuilding Home in the Wake of Katrina. It's being released just a few weeks in advance of the 7th anniversary of the storm, and it talks about the grassroots recovery efforts that have taken place in 5 different New Orleans neighborhoods in the years since. Tom, welcome.
Hey, how's it going, Zach?
So tell me a little bit about the book, just on a basic level.
This is not a book about the storm itself. This is a book about how residents rebuilt their neighborhoods after the flood. So it's a book about the recovery. It looks at recovery in Broadmoor, Lakeview, the Lower Ninth Ward, the Vietnamese community in New Orleans East, and Holly Grove. And it follows some of the interesting residents who served as leaders in those neighborhoods as they got residents in those neighborhoods organized and brought people home.
I want to get to the meat of the book, which is really the characters that you talk about, the individual New Orleanians whose stories you tell and whose efforts collectively make up the grassroots neighborhood-wide recovery efforts that the book is really about. Who's Phil Harris?
Phil Harris is a resident of Holly Grove. At the time of the storm, he was 78. He's now well over 80 and still kicking. He is somebody who has lived on the same block on Olive Street for most of his life. And his wife has lived in the same house her entire life. They are two people who came back very quickly after the storm because of their determination and because of their connection to where they lived. They're two people who benefited to a degree from volunteers and work provided by Trinity Christian Community, TCC, which was a neighborhood youth organization in Holly Grove. And when after the storm happened, Kevin, the director, realized that there weren't going to be any kids in Holly Grove if there wasn't a Holly Grove. And So the organization's whole mission shifted for several years, and they brought in volunteer teams, coordinated well over 100 AmeriCorps workers, and brought many blocks of that neighborhood back. And you know, that wasn't single-handed. Residents like Phil and like many other people in Holly Grove were doing a lot of the work themselves, but TCC lent a helping hand and also helped to contribute to a sense of momentum in the neighborhood. It helps to have somebody reach out to you and say, hey, we can help you paint, we can help you install drywall, we can help guide you through this permitting process. And, you know, if we can do that, then maybe you can come home. And that little bit often was the sort of the tipping point for mm-hmm. residents and families.
And Phil had kind of a daily ritual he had to go through for a while when he was rebuilding his house.
That's right. He was staying at a family property uptown that had not flooded, and he didn't have a car. I can't imagine quite how he did this, and it helps to know him because he's just a very resolute man. But he would walk out every day to Carrollton Avenue and hitch a ride as far as he could. Often he would get to Claiborne and then have to hitch another ride. And eventually he'd get up to his house on Olive Street, and he would gut, he would paint, he would do whatever he needed to do in the heat, with no air conditioning, often with no assistance, and then schlep back out to Carrollton and hitchhike back down the road to his unflooded property until he got himself situated in a FEMA trailer. But that was his routine for several months. Mm-hmm. I hope that when I'm 78, I'll have that much energy.
What sort of a sense did you get for the decisions that people like Phil had to make as far as whether to put in just the extraordinary amount of work involved in saving a house that was practically destroyed in the storm and the sentimental importance that that property had to him and his wife?
Well, it really varied. And I think that's a story that you can see inscribed in the landscape of New Orleans mm-hmm. right now. There are people and there are families who thought that they didn't have any choice at all, that there was no place that they could imagine living other than their house and their block. And many of those people came back right away. There are people who faced a great deal of adversity before the storm and during the storm and were really on the fence about whether to come back. And for those people, living in an organized neighborhood made a tremendous difference in terms of pushing them over the edge to get them to reinvest and to go through the extraordinary personal sacrifices that they had to make to come home. And there were some people who looked at the situation and made a conscious choice not to come home because of perceived risk and because it was going to be really painful to come back. I guess I've mentioned three groups. There's a fourth group, which is a sad group to think about. And that's people who wanted to come home 7 years ago and still want to come home now and haven't been able to. There aren't as many of them now, 7 years later, as there were right after the storm, but it's still a sizable number. And there are people like that in every neighborhood I profiled, whether it's relatively well off families or elderly people in Lakeview, or people who just do not have the resources from Holly Grove or Broadmoor or the Lower Ninth Ward who want to come back but just can't.
So Father Vien is a Vietnamese Catholic leader in East New Orleans who plays a big part in the book.
Father Vien played a huge role in Village de l'Est's recovery. As the parish priest for Mary Queen of Vietnam Church, he not only served as the community's spiritual leader, but also as its de facto sort of mayor and head of state. This dates back to the way that Catholic parishes run in North Vietnam, where this parish originally traces its roots back to. After the storm showed up on radar, an evacuation started to get going in Village de l'Est that was organized around the church. For example, several of the choirs made a caravan and went out of the city together and evacuated in one group. And people also kept good track of each other. There are wards and districts within the church that help to sort of govern the community. And because of that structure, people kept good enough track of the 6,000 parishioners that they knew exactly which two people were unaccounted for shortly after the evacuation was completed. They were able to report right back to Father Vien which two people were missing, and he started the search right away. He stayed behind with a couple hundred parishioners in their Sunday school room. So his charismatic leadership also helped to bring back the neighborhood. As soon as their zip code opened, had a very coordinated and organized recovery whereby a bunch of people drove in all together, set up a kitchen, and set up work teams so that they could go sort of house to house and get things completed very quickly. As soon as they were allowed to stay overnight, they did. And they had their first mass back at Mary Queen of Vietnam in a sort of gutted, still slightly moldy space only a few days after they first came back.
Yeah.
And it was attended by 300 people, which is quite remarkable.
Pam Dashiell is another neighborhood leader who shows up in the book.
Pam was a force of nature. She is deeply missed by all who knew her. Pam is somebody who moved to the Holy Cross part of the Lower Ninth Ward in the 1980s and very quickly became politically and socially involved with the neighborhood. She was part of an effort to prevent the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers from expanding the Industrial Canal, which threatened several hundred homes, both in the Lower Ninth Ward and in Holy Cross. And she developed a really strong environmental consciousness and became very good at articulating that well before the storm. And that came in handy after the levee breaks, when Holy Cross in particular used the concept of green rebuilding to brand itself and to make itself attractive to national donors. The work that the Center for Sustainable Engagement and Development has done in Holy Cross has really helped a lot of that neighborhood's recovery and created a sense of momentum in that neighborhood. And that traces back to Pam's values and Pam's leadership.
So your interest in disaster recovery actually predates your moving to New Orleans and your research on Katrina. You co-authored a book a few years back with Utpal Sandesra. It's called No One Had a Tongue to Speak, and you studied a dam disaster, the response to a dam disaster in India, an extremely
yes.
deadly disaster there.
This is a book not just about the response to that disaster, but about the whole disaster. It was the deadliest dam collapse in history. As many as 25,000 people died. It was a dam collapse caused by a faulty design. And it was a disaster whose causes were covered up by the state government and were not brought to light. So to this day, people in the disaster-affected area do not know why the dam collapsed. The government rebuilt the dam without telling the people why the disaster happened and over their fierce objections. Interestingly enough, before the New Orleans book launch, I'm flying to India for the launch of No One Had a Tongue to Speak in India, which is the place where it's most important for it to come out and for that story to be told.
Now, as I understand it, your interest in Katrina was spurred by the fact that you see the recovery in India was very much a state-directed, top-down recovery with little or no citizen or neighborhood involvement, whereas the recovery in Katrina as a result of the sort of fecklessness of the government on various levels was forced to be totally citizen-based and neighborhood-based.
Zach, that's exactly right. Neither of the two approaches is ideal. So what Utpal and I found in India was that entire neighborhoods were very quickly rebuilt, either by the government or by government-appointed large nonprofits, without residents even being consulted about how their homes would be built. Now, to two Americans, this struck us as unbelievable that people would tolerate this. In India, the sense was that while it was unpleasant, this was the government's place, and nobody really questioned that. Seeing how the recovery in Morbi, which is the city destroyed by this dam, seeing how that recovery progressed made me very interested in what the opposite type of recovery would look like. A recovery driven by survivors of a disaster that reflected their values and their interests. Of course, the downside of the recovery in New Orleans is that neighborhoods did much of this work without real government assistance. Now, the ideal is a recovery that empowers people and lets them make decisions about how to rebuild, but gives them the resources needed to do that. And unfortunately, that happened in neither case.
What, for you, was the principal failure of the government in its response to the storm? Is there one thing that stands out that could have been done differently that would have really helped these neighborhoods with their recoveries? I know there's a whole lot of answers to that question, but is there one that stands out for you?
There was a severe failure of willpower at the federal level. The federal level is where the money to rebuild an American city was going to come from. New Orleans was bankrupt and it couldn't borrow money. So there is no way that the city government was going to be able to do anything. The state government, likewise, did not have the billions of dollars that would be required to rebuild New Orleans. Eventually, much of the money for the recovery, whether that was through city development grants or through the Road Home program, did come from the feds, but it came very late. And it came very late because the Bush administration did not care enough to make sure that it got to where it needed to go. By contrast, Babubhai Jeshbhai Patel, who is the chief minister of Gujarat state where this flood in India occurred, moved his entire cabinet to the city where the flood happened for an entire month and personally oversaw the recovery. And what he said was that we can see 70 out of 100 rupees wasted. We don't want corruption, but if it happens, that's okay. We need to make sure that the city gets rebuilt. There was nowhere close to that amount of willpower on the part of the Bush administration.
Are there particular policy implications in America that you hope can be drawn from the sort of research you're doing?
I think that there are policy implications for the neighborhood-based nature of the New Orleans recovery, and they apply in disaster-stricken areas across the United States and across the world. What organized neighborhoods in New Orleans have shown is that it is possible to empower citizens to rebuild every aspect of their communal lives in the wake of a disaster. Residents have opened their own schools, they have restarted their own police forces, they have created their own social service organizations, they have reopened libraries, and they have created senses of community that in some cases didn't exist before the storm. Residents are the experts on the places where they live. They know better than anybody else what life was like before, and they know better than anybody else what they would like life to be like in the future. Partnerships between government and disaster-affected people are incredibly important. And New Orleans neighborhoods, in spite of the fact that they did not receive the assistance that they deserve, show just how powerful resident input and resident control can be. One city that's taken a huge interest in this is San Francisco. And the reason they're so interested is that they know that sooner or later, there's going to be a massive earthquake that levels a lot of their city. And the speed of that recovery is going to depend a lot on the resilience of their neighborhoods.
You adopted a narrative nonfiction rather than academic style for the book. How did you settle on a format for all the research you were doing?
So I was originally sent down by professors at the Harvard Kennedy School to do very academic research about the neighborhood-based recovery efforts going on in the city. And what became very quickly apparent was that there were incredibly compelling stories that everybody in the city had. And it didn't seem right for me to just write an academic piece because I know how few people actually read those. And also because these stories were so interesting that I couldn't stop telling them to people. This is really a collection of stories from people I greatly admire, and it's a collection of stories about places that I really love. And I hope that the people who contributed their stories to this book feel that they've been done justice in the pages.
Great. Our guest has been Tom Wooten. The book is We Shall Not Be Moved, Rebuilding Home in the Wake of Katrina.
Zach, thanks so much. This has been
fun. Thanks a lot. You've been listening to the Offbeat Podcast.